Everyone, it's great to see all of you. Thanks again for coming out to learn together. Tonight's year is sponsored by Rachel and Akiva Romanoff, memory of Akiva's father, Avram David Nathan Ben Arab Gerst Ben Aparal, A. David Romanoff, Zichron Alevracha, and by Rona Jeff Rubin, in memory of Jeff's mother, Leah Rachel by Yitzchak, Zichron Alevracha, may their Neshamos have an Aliyah. Bezrat Hashem, next week, Wednesday night is Tisha B'Av, well, not, Bezrat Hashem next week will not be Tisha B'Av in the sense that, you know, it will be the 9th of Av, but hopefully not in the fasting sense. But so let's plan for Tuesday night next week. If you can make it, great. If not, we'll send out a recording of it. But that will be the finale for at least this month. And we'll see how far we get up to if we want to continue either with this or something else afterwards. Here's where we are up to. Malachim, Eliyahu Hanavi, appears on the scene and he stops the rain immediately. And this is a time where B'nai Israel is on a terrible path. They've started following the god of Baal, who is the god of storms. This is in part due to the fact that Ahav, who is the king of Israel at this point, who's done some terrible things, including marrying his wife Izebel, who is the daughter of the Phoenician king. At this point, they've sort of, the whole kingdom of Malchut Yisrael has been led astray. These are the 10 northern tribes. They've gone astray, they're heading in a terrible direction. And Eliyahu Navi goes onto the scene and stops the rain. And clearly this is a way of sort of reminding them that if you're serving other gods, you know, you're not going to get rain, right? That's what he's saying in Shema every single day. But then we have this whole training exercise for Eliyahu, and we noted that there are primarily two problems with Eliyahu and Navi at this point. One is that he's not seemingly having sufficient amount of midas harachamim, compassion, care for the people. Yes, you have to be a man of principle, but you also have to balance that with compassion. And on the other and on top of that, there's another issue, which seems to be that Eliyahu HaNavi is not giving enough credit to God, so to speak. That even if it's coming from God and God gives his stamp of approval, the way Eliyahu HaNavi presents it at the beginning, the stopping the rain, is ki'im lefi divari, except for at my word, meaning I'm going to be the one who sort of decides when the rain's going to start or when the rain's going to stop. Now, of course, that's not the case. God is the one who ultimately decides this. But the way it's presented is problematic. That's what Amnon Bazak's point in the previous one, from Moshe Lichtenstein and others. So now we get to, and we had just had this whole dramatic dialogue with Ovadyahu, who is the, let's say, the top guy in Ahav's kingdom. And Hashem says to him, beforehand, go meet with Ahav, and I'm going to bring back the rain. Okay? Now, here's where we are. So we are on now, Pasuk, Yud Zayin. It's on page 856. We're on Pasuk Yud Zayin. You have the Hebrew and English. And I want us to read the story together, looking at two things. Okay, number one, whenever we read Navi, we always have to keep in mind, well, why is this called Navi? It's because each literary decision is prophetically inspired. So that means every single choice that a Navi is going to make here, Yirmiyahu, is going to be important. And we want to look at what language is used and what's repeated and how it's presented. We're going to be looking at that. And the second is, how is Eliyahu HaNavi going to set up the show? And I have to be honest with you, this is one of my favorite prakim in all of Tanakh. Because here you have the most dramatic showdown. I actually think perhaps, you know, aside from maybe Korach, and this actually may even top that. And you'll see what I mean. Even just reading the story together will have been worthwhile. But we'll try to provide some additional analysis on top of that. Okay, but let's start with Pasuk Yud Zayin. So Vayhi Kiror Achav et Eliyahu. So when Achav sees Eliyahu, Vayomer Achav Elav, Achav says to him, Hata zeh ocher Yisrael. Is that you, ocher Yisrael, the troubler of Israel, the one who's causing Israel to suffer? Now, Vayomer, he says to him, Lo acharti Yisrael, I am not the one who has caused Israel to suffer. Ki im ata uveid avicha. You're the one who caused Israel to suffer, not just you, but your father. Ba'azvacham et mitzvah Hashem, when you abandoned God's commandments, Vatelech acharei ha'baalim, and you went after the Baalim, the god of storms. And then he's going to come up with a plan. But what did you notice repeating here in those two psukim? What word? So if you look at Yitzayin, where it says, Ha'atazeh ocher Yisrael, is that you, the troubler of Israel? What does Eliyahu say in response? He says, Lo acharti Yisrael. No, it's not me, it's you. Now, to dumb it down tremendously, it's, you know, sometimes you have little kids, you know, one says, oh, you're stupid, and the other one says, no, I'm not stupid, you're stupid. Right, I mean, it seems pretty petty and immature, right? What's going on here? And it's double emphasized. So I think this is actually what's going on here, and it's really, really important. We mentioned before that part of the problem with Eliyahu HaNavi's presentation thus far is that it seems to be about him. It's not so much connecting it to God above, right? Now, what's fascinating is, if I was Achav, who should I really be upset at? Who, if I'm really upset at the fact that there's no rain, who should I really be upset at? Hashem, right? God. But who is he accusing? That's Eliyahu. Isn't that fascinating? That seemingly Achav does not get the message. That he should understand. This isn't about Eliyahu and Navi stopping the rain for 3 years. This is about God. But for him, you are Achar Yisrael. And Eliyahu and Navi say, you missed the whole point. It's not me. It's you and your father. Because what have you done? You've abandoned the ways of the Torah. And we read in Shema. And what's going to happen? Right? If what happens if you serve other gods? Exactly this. But it's so fascinating that Achav doesn't get that message. Right? He thinks Eliyahu is the Ocher Yisrael. Eliyahu says, no, I'm not the Ocher Yisrael. You are. But he doesn't get it. Yeah. Right. So you could say, right, that, but at the end of the day, it's clear, right, you're right, that maybe Eliyahu Navi's not giving enough credit to God here, and that's part of what may lead Achav to this. But nonetheless, it should be clear to Achav that, you know, there's a reason why this is happening. It's not just one prophet, but there's a whole backstory here. So that I think is, you know, it's not just some petty argument, you're stupid, you know, you're stupid. Like, it's more than that. It's actually very deep. There's a problem. They're not getting the message. They're not chapping. This is because of their actions. It's not just because of Eliyahu. Okay. But then, and he says that explicitly. But then, Pasuk Yetet, Ve'ata shalach kavotz Eli kol Yisrael el har Karmel. So here he sets up the most dramatic showdown. What is it? He says, gather for me all of Bnei Yisrael el har Karmel, to har Karmel. That Nevi'ei ha'Baal arba me'ot v'chamishim, Nevi'ei ha'Asherah arba me'ot. So what does he say? So I want you to do this. I want you to gather for me 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah, Ochlei Shulchan Izebel. These are the ones who basically eat at the table of Izebel. Izebel supports all the fake prophets, Baal and Asherah, and she kills all the Jewish prophets, the real prophets. Okay, so Eliyahu Navi wants everyone to come. He wants to have this whole huge show. Fine. What does Achav do? Vayishlach Achav b'chol b'nei Yisrael, vayikbotz et ha'nevi'im el har ha'Karmel. So what does he do? He gathers everybody together. So now the scene is set. The scene is set. And here we have all of Bnei Israel gathered, at least the 10 tribes are gathered. And now we've got the Nevi'ei HaBaal and Nevi'ei Asherah. Well, the Nevi'ei Asherah aren't going to show up, actually. We have the Nevi'ei HaBaal, and you have Eliyahu HaNavi with all the people there, okay? Now, what happens next? So Eliyahu HaNavi, fine. Good. Yeah, go ahead. Anybody have a question? No. All right. Yeah. So what's fascinating is, and this leads me to my next point, which is here's the issue with Achav, and here's the issue in general. Now, Achav is sort of symbolic of somebody who's very conflicted. Right? On the one hand, Achav, and we may have alluded to this in the last year, on the one hand, Achav has Izebel at his side, who is the worst. Literally, the name is dung. She's trash, right? She's terrible. But on the other hand, he's got Ovadiyahu in the kingdom, and now he's listening to Eliyahu. And so he's sort of this kind of in-between figure. And there seems to be actually a number of these types of figures in these parakim. But Achav doesn't seem to be purely bad. At the end, there has to be some credit for him here that he's willing to make this happen. And beyond that, maybe Eliyahu's message to him has somewhat gotten through at this point. But it is interesting that Achav is willing to give in to let this go on. Okay. Please. Oh, I don't know if Achav knows it's going to fail, but I so okay. So here maybe I'll make this point in a minute, but I'll make it now. The situation Bnei Israel is in the following. When they're worshiping Baal, it doesn't mean they're worshiping Baal to the exclusion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What they're doing is they're doing basically polytheism, or they're having numerous gods at once. And it makes sense. If you're a farmer, and you rely on the rain, and you see many people around you in the surrounding nations, and now the queen, are all worship this god of storms, and you really rely on rain, so what would you do? So hedge your bets. Pray for one god and pray for the other god. It makes a lot of sense, right? Now the problem is that's avodah zarah. We don't, you know, that's not a good thing, to say the least. But you can understand the mentality. And the problem with the Jews at this point in time is they seem to be having sort of belief in both and giving credence to both.
Not necessarily, you know, there's a Jewish guy who's a woman who's not,
Right. It's a, whether he doesn't have conviction in either, or he. Right. So it's a little bit, and he also could be, there's some desperation here. He really needs to get water for the people. So it's a little bit, it's not fully clear, but Ahav does not seem to be as bad as Izebel, clearly. Yeah.
So is that what he understands?
Exactly. Excellent. So that's what we're going to see right now. And I'm going to say it right now. She said it better than me, but I'll try my best to capture her. Yeah, please. Right, specifically ones who are sitting at the, yeah, very good, right, yeah, very nice, that's a great point also. So here we're going to look at the beginning of the story, okay? So Ahav goes and he gathers the Nevi'im, okay? And by the way, so the Asherah prophets are not going to show up. Why aren't they going to show up? Well, they know that they're fake, right? So if you know you're going to be killed, then you might want to avoid the showdown. So they don't actually show up. But take a look here at Pasuk Chaf. So Vayisa Achav goes and he gathers all the Nevi'im and Har Carmel. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayigash Eliyahu El Kol Ha'am. Eliyahu goes and steps out to all the people. Vayomer Ad Matai Atem Postrim Ashtei Asipim. Sipim. He said, how long are you going to keep hopping, you know, over the two fences? Meaning, how long are you going to keep trying to worship God, worship Hashem, and also worship the other ones? Im Hashem Elokim l'chu acharav. If Hashem is the real God, go after him. Vim ha'baal l'chu acharav. And if it's Baal, go after him. Lo anu ha'am oto davar. And the nation does not respond to him at all. So very dramatic, right? He's trying to get them into it. It's like, in camp, they're trying to get the kids to sing sometimes, and no one's joining in, you know? It's like, you're just in. That's kind of what's like, trying to get people into it, not happening so far, okay? We're going to keep an eye on how he interacts with the people as we go forward. Now, I want to just make one point here. And this is something I heard from Rabbi Nachum Leitag, but I found it in Rabbi Alex Israel's Sefer as well. Why exactly, every single thing here is set up by Eliyahu, right? Why is he choosing Har Carmel? Why is he choosing Har Carmel? So here, Rabbi Israel presents two explanations. I'll say them outside. The first one is this. The Har Carmel is an area which is perennially green. So Baal, which is the god of storms, so where's your home turf? Where's your, so if you want to go, this is, where's home court for Baal, the god of storms? It's Har Carmel. Meaning if I take Baal to the desert, the god of storms, that's not really his strong place. But what Eliyahu Navi is doing here is he's saying, let's go, okay, so you want to, let's see a showdown between Baal, we'll play at your court. Right? Meaning this is his way of saying, I'm giving them every single opportunity, right? This is their home playing field, and you're going to see he gives them more opportunities as well. Okay? So he's going to Har Carmel. The other option he suggests, and that's going to be a theme we're going to see again and again here, right? Because all this is about, again, is proving to Bnei Israel that there's only one God, there can't be both. The other one, and this is again relating to Poseach, Aser, Sifim, how long are you going to be hopping over two different fences, so to speak? Second one is, why Har Carmel? And he says here, from its peak, Carmel lies between two cultures. From its peak, one could, this is the towards the middle of it, one could look northward to the coastline and the trading areas under Phoenician administration and influence. All right, so what do you see when you're up there? So looking southwest, one sees the hills of Samaria, the ancestral portion of Ephraim, the Israeli heartland, which never gets taken away. So if Israel is wavering between two opinions, two cultural systems, two religious orientations, the Carmel is positioned at the fulcrum between them. How brilliant is that? He's standing here, look, you have one or the other. You can't be, it's the stark contrast. So Eliyahu brilliantly here is setting up on Har Carmel. One, it's their playing field, right, the Nevi'ei HaBaal, and two, it's showing to Bnei Yisrael very dramatically, this powerful imagery. Look, you have one or the other. It can't be both. That's what he says here. Again, this is the test, and this is the challenge of Bnei Yisrael at this point. Okay, let's read a little bit further here. So, the nation doesn't respond to him. Vayomer Eliyahu el ha'am, Eliyahu Navi says to the nation, Ye ani notarti Navi la'Hashem levadi. I am alone, I am the only prophet of Hashem left. Now, it's just interesting, right? Because what about Vajahu, and what about the 100 prophets he had kept in the cave? So it's unclear to me whether he has any respect for those Nevi'im, because they're still around there. Or maybe they're not considered, maybe they're trainees, they're not at the level yet. Or it's just for dramatics, to make it dramatic and to play it up, yeah. Right, so it could, that's what I'm saying, right. Either literally, like he's the only one, yeah.
Or Ahab doesn't know that they're in hiding.
Right, you don't want to call. That's a fair point, right? If you reveal that they're the ones who are in hiding, fair point also. Okay, so a lot of different explanations here, but that's a very good one also. So, what happens? So he says, it's just me alone. So the Asher, there are too much of wimps to show up, okay? So again, you realize the whole dramatic, I'm alone, they're 450, and he's giving them every shot, every opportunity. And he says the following, and he gives, let's give to them two bulls. Okay, fourth last line. And they shall choose, right, one bull, and what are they going to do? And so what should they do? They should put it on the wood, but don't put any fire there. And I'll also do one. So they're going to set up one, and I'm going to set up one. And they're going to call out in the name of their God. And I'm going to call out in the name of my God. And the God who responds, that's going to be the real God. It's not so complicated, right? God that responds is the real God. Now, what happens to the people? Vayan kol ha'am vayomru tov hadavar. And so then the people say, thumbs up. We're in. Good. Okay? So you see the people, there's some sort of transition happening here as well. Okay. Vayomer Eliyahu l'nevi'ei ha'baal, and Eliyahu says to the prophets of Baal, bacharu lachem ha'par ha'achad v'asu rishona, ki atem ha'rabim. You get first, you get up there first. You have the first shot at it. Okay? Me, I won't even get a shot. You get up there, you get the first shot. Because you guys are many. Okay, and he tells them to go ahead with it. So what's he doing now? He's a little bit trash talking, right? He's like, oh, you know, you go. Now it's going to get even better. So it's just fascinating, because the whole time is they get to choose one, and then it's like, and they take the power that was given to them. So I'm not sure what to make of that, but just throwing that out there. It says, so what did they do? Exactly what they're supposed to do. And they're calling out to Baal from the morning until the evening. They're more saying the following. Habal anenu. Baal, answer us. Now listen to this. Ve'ein kol ve'ein oneh. But there's no sound, there's no response. Ve'yifashu ala mizbeach asher asa. And they danced by the altar that he had made. What's interesting here? What language is being used? Pesach. Right? Again, they represent, right, the Pesach, right? Again, it's using the same, you don't need to use the same exact language, right? Here, how long are you, B'nai Israel, going to be Poseach? Here, what are the Nevi'ei HaBaal doing? They are Poseach, quite literally. Isn't that fascinating? So again, Yirmiyahu here, the language is not unintentional. Okay. And then, here we go. This is Eliyahu, trash-talking genius. So here's what he says. Vayiva tzarayim, vayahatel bahem Eliyahu. And now Eliyahu Navi is basically making fun of them. He's criticizing them or mocking them. Vayomer kiru v'kol gadol ki Elokim hu. Call out in a loud voice, because you know he's a god, right? Ki siav chisiglo v'chi derechlo. So perhaps maybe he's conversing, or maybe he's on he's pursuing enemies, or maybe he's going to the bathroom. Ulay yashen hu v'yakat. Maybe he's asleep and maybe he'll awaken. So here's what. See, now Eliyahu Navi, he's just having fun here. I think there's more going on than just that, right? But Eliyahu Navi here is literally, he's saying, oh, maybe speak a little louder. Maybe they can't hear you, right? Maybe he's in the bathroom. He's really ridiculing them and ridiculing their ideology. And what happens? Vayikru'u b'kol gadol, and they call out with a loud voice. Vayit godidu k'mishpatam b'charavot v'rachmim ad shifach dam alehem. What do they start doing? They literally start cutting themselves. Right, they start cutting themselves with swords until blood's spurting everywhere. And what happens? What do you expect to happen? They don't get any response. There's no sound, there's no response, no listener. So they've utterly failed. Right? They've utterly failed. Okay, yes. It's interesting. So I did see that brought up. Why exactly it's done in this way? It's possible. It's also a little bit to imitate previous stories of Korach or something. It's a good question.
If one opportunity to say, our Baal is not the god of fire.
Yeah, I think perhaps that's the reason why. I think Rav Amnon Bezak may suggest that there's something to the fact that it's like done in a model that Bnei Yisrael is previously familiar with. Yeah. You're saying this is a more surefire, miraculous way. Fire doesn't emerge from anywhere. Right. Interesting. Nice. Yeah, and that was, yeah. Right. So I think that's a very good reference. Last year we mentioned how there seems to be a lot of allusions to Abraham in those stories earlier on with Rivka. So it's a lot of. I think there's a lot here that dovetails with some of those stories. I think that midrash is really connecting to something with Gidon, but it's the same concept again and again. How do you prove to people? It's quite literally to show them that your God is nothing, has no capabilities. Yeah, Israel. Oh yeah, just stretching before. That's all right. Maybe I was just hoping there'd be a... Okay, fine. So here we are at this point in the story. Now, Eliyahu HaNavi has set the scene. He set it, right, dramatic showdown. They have so far completely failed, okay? I think that's a fair assessment. But now Eliyahu HaNavi is going to go a step further here. And what he does is that he's going to get the people even more into it. But here's what happens. So Eliyahu says, everybody please come closer to me. So okay, listen. Get the people come closer, you bring them in, right? Saying if you're, that's a way of making, there's plenty of room, everyone please come up. Fine. And he repairs the altar of Hashem that had been destroyed. Okay? Yeah, so it's an interesting question. It's not fully clear whether this is one that they had destroyed earlier on. I'm not fully. I mean, also there's a whole halachic discussion about how he could be bringing korbanot outside of the Beit HaMikdash. So it's not fully clear exactly. What seems to be the most important point here, and this is the information that maybe we don't have intentionally. The Navi's not presenting to us. What does he choose to do? He decides to repair a mizbeach Hashem ha'arus. So he decides to repair a mizbeach. Okay, that's an interesting choice, right? Now, two. What else does he do? So he takes 12 stones. Now, again, we're reading this book like a piece of literature to some extent, right? Of course, a divine literature. But what does the author do here that he doesn't need to do? But what does he choose to include here? Right. Well, you're right. But one step further. I don't need to say, the one who Hashem came to you to say Yisrael will be your name. Why doesn't he reference that? It's a little out of place, right?
He's identifying them.
Okay, good. So you're saying it's bringing them. Now it's interesting because 12. How many tribes are there? 10, right? There are 10 at this point. So hey, guys, I'm just raising the questions. We're gonna have to try to deal with them, but yeah.
Is this a definition?
All right. So we'll talk about it in 1 second, but I want to bring that comment back in. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Very good. So I think there's a lot to... Very good. Yeah, very good. So Eliyahu Navi here, right, goes, he builds, he repairs the previous Mizbeach, and he sets up 12 stones, and I get ready for this. V'yivnet avanim Mizbeach b'shem Hashem, and he builds it, b'shem Hashem. Okay, so what's he doing here? Clear some b'shem Hashem, right, from God. Okay. And then, v'yas ta'ala k'veitza time zera saviv l'mizbeach, and he sets up this whole area around it. Fine. He does this all. He all sets everything up. Pasuk Lamedalet. Vayomer milu arba chadim mayim. And what does he do? Go fill 4 jugs of water. Who's he talking to? Sarah. So what's he doing now?
Well, he's,
He's actually answering her question, saying, well, I'm going to pour water on it.
Ah, fascinating.
I'm just going to pour water. And I'm going to show you that my fire is holding your water.
So now he has audience participation.
Right, exactly. So that's, yeah, that's my question. No, literally, quite literally, I think that's what it is. This is literally getting audience participation. That's the best, right? Public speaking 101. Try to get the audience, you know, to laugh, to participate. Fine. So then, fine. And they go, and then they spread it around. There's a lot to say here about this, but fine. Goes, they do it three times, and there's water all around the altar, and water even fills up the trench. So again, this is, and this is relating to what you were saying before, very good. What's your name? Mira, excellent comment. So here it's actually probably, again, it's like we're putting water around it. I mean, if this only is going to happen, if it's a miracle from God. Now, what occurs here? And they go, oh, fine. And then, so I just want to make a comment let me just make a couple comments about what he's, maybe the message he's sending to them with the 12 stones and the fact that he's repairing a previous altar. Anybody have any suggestions? Somebody have. Alan, you said, yeah. Alan, what was your suggestion? Say it again.
Again, it's a reunification of the 12 tribes.
Right, so one is that while here we're sitting with 10 tribes, and by the way, in Divrei Hayamim, which is a fascinating book because it tells many of the same stories or talks about the same time period with some same stories, it doesn't talk about Eliyahu HaNavi. Why not? Because that's only a book talking about Malchut Yehuda. So it doesn't talk about Eliyahu HaNavi. It's a pretty important figure, but he's not part of that. You guys, it's all with the northern kingdom, the kingdom that broke off. So here, it's actually quite striking that he's saying it's the 12 tribes. So I think that could be one allusion to it, yeah? Okay, that's similar to what I'm going to say. Go ahead, Mira. Okay, good. So that's the direction I wanted to suggest. What's he doing here? What's he sending? What message is he sending to them? You know, things have gone completely downhill at this point. Completely downhill. It's a terrible time. They lost rain for 3 years because of it. What a horrible, torturous curse. But what's he saying to them? You have the capacity and ability to do tshuva. So the same way that this Mizbeach can be transformed and rebuilt and fixed. It's not just that. Said there was a time where there were 12 tribes, and there was a time where things were good, and there was a time where we were all one nation serving Ribono Shel Olam. I'm not even sure he's taking a jab at them for the fact that there are only 10 out of the 12. I think the point is that you were better than this. You were capable of this. We were a nation of 12 tribes. You were a nation, and he's trying to bring them back to that. And that's the lesson he's sending them here. Repair the Mizbeach, right? I think that's the lesson he's sending to them here, perhaps. Okay, but then we get to the best part of the story. So, Vayihi Ba'alot HaMincha, Vayigash Eliyahu HaNavi Vayomar, Hashem Elokei Abraham Yitzchak V'Yisrael. So Eliyahu HaNavi goes at the time, it's his time to show his God. And what does he do? He says, Vayomar Hashem Elokei Abraham Yitzchak V'Yisrael, Hayom Yivada, today it will be made known, Ki Ata Elokim B'Yisrael V'Ani Avdecha. Today it will be made known that I am the God, that I am your servant and you are the God. Okay? Uvidvarcha asisi. Fi divari. Uvidvarcha asisi. Okay? Et kol hadvarim ha'ele. We're going to reflect in a moment on why that's such an incredible pasuk. But then here's the line. Aneni Hashem, aneni. He calls out to God. It's so moving. He says, Hashem, please answer me. Now, who else tried to do this? Baal, right? Ve'en kol ve'en oneh. Aneni Hashem, aneni. Ve'edu'u ha'am azeh ki ata Hashem elokim. The nation shall know that you are Hashem, a God. V'ata hasibota elibam achoranit. Okay, and you will return their hearts back. Okay, there's a lot of different explanations for what that might mean. Let's take the Arshko one. V'atipol eish Hashem v'atochal et ha'olah v'etayitzim. And the fire comes down for heaven, and it eats up the offering, and it eats up the wood. Et ha'vanim, et ha'afar, et ha'mayim asher v'ta'olah l'checha. It dries up everything. Meaning, this is... Now, it's not just a miracle of, oh, the fire came down. The fire goes down and, you know, takes care of everything. Okay. And then what happens? Listen to this. Vayar kol ha'am. And this nation that just prior to this, had been worshiping Avodah Zarah, had been worthy of a 3-year curse for the drought, that their king had married a god, the daughter of some idolatrous kingdom. All of a sudden, what happens at this moment? Vayara kol ha'am, vayiplu al paneihem. The nation sees and they fall on their faces. Vayomru, and they say, Hashem hu ha'elokim, Hashem hu ha'elokim. You know that phrase from somewhere? When do we say that? Right, Yom Kippur and Eilah, a very important phrase. In that moment, the people completely turn back. And then what happens? Next, immediately afterwards, Vayomer Eliyahu lahem, Eliyahu says to them, Tifsu et Nevi'ei HaBaal, go grab the Nevi'ei HaBaal, don't let any of them escape. And what do you think the people do? They go and they slaughter, they grab them and they slaughter them. So this people, who at the beginning, Eliyahu tries to go over to them and they, you know, they're not singing along with him, so to speak. All of a sudden, this people is screaming out, Hashem hu Elokim. Who else can do something like that besides Eliyahu HaNavi? What is an unbelievable story. That very nation has completely flipped in the course of the story. And to the extent that now, what's happened? They're going and killing based on his command. I want to reflect on something with you, but I just want to, one of these points, but let's just take a look here for a second at a chart I put together, okay? And then we're going to make mention of the most important point I want to make of this parak, okay? So take a look here. This is the chart then, the people's involvement. So, Vayigash Eliyahu El Ha'am. Eliyahu goes out to the nation, then, V'lo Anu Ha'am Oto Davar, and the nation doesn't respond to him at all. See, it's brilliant here. But now what happens? Then next one, Vayan Kol Ha'am V'yomru Tov Ha'davar. Then the answer is, okay, it's good. So they're not, but they're getting involved. Then next, audience participation. He invites them to go fill up the water. And then what happens? Vayar Kol Ha'am V'yaplu Ha'panehem. Meaning the whole nation has now, from this nation that had rejected him at the beginning, is now everyone's in, right? Everyone's in. And they go and they listen to him. And they go. So you realize what he's done for them, the massive transition amongst the people. This is all within one story, but what an accomplishment by Eliyahu HaNavi. And we talked about last time how there are people, you know, Ovadyahu, there's a lot to say about him. But Ovadyahu's been working with Ahab for a bunch of years already. He never was able to pull off something like this. And so it's these people, sometimes with a pure passion and drama and extremes, that sometimes are able to pull off something like this. Now, at the same time, we're going to have to evaluate how long this works for. Okay, and that's, you know, but let's stay in a good, you know, unhappy place till next week. Okay, you know, don't, you know, feel good about it for now. Okay, but I want to just make one key point here, and then we'll take comments and we'll finish up the para. This is the point I want to make. I think this is the most important. So, you know, we're actually going to jump down to Rabbi Chaim Jacob from David to Destruction. And so here, Eliyahu HaNavi says in Pasuk Lamedov, which you saw, Uvidvaracha, Asisi, as called Verim Ha'ila. It's by your word that I've done all these things. Now he says, though, it seems like Hashem commands him to do all of this. It doesn't sound like that. And the Psukim, the way it's presented to us, is not that God has told him to do this whole thing. Right? It doesn't seem like that. Right? And in fact, that's what the Radak says. Radak says, he just gives him a mandate to do it. Now again, you realize here, there's no clear command as to what to do. And he's the one who actually comes up with this whole plan, perhaps. And yet, who does he attribute it to? Hashem. So now look at this chart here, Eliyahu's transition. Okay? Eliyahu's transition. You look here at Pasuk Aleph, the first Pasuk we learned together from the Eliyahu stories. And the Pasuk says, Vayomer Eliyahu atishim mitzvei gilad alachav, chai Hashem lokei Yisrael shemarati lefanav, imiyeh hashanim eila talu matar, kiim lefi divari. Except for at my word. Now in this parak here, Pasuk Lamed Bet, what does he say? He calls it Pasuk Lamed Vav. He says, he calls out to Hashem, and he says, Hashem Elokei Avraham Yitzchak V'Yashar Hayom Yivada. So what happens? He calls out to Hashem, this is the left side, Ki Ata Elokim B'Yisrael V'Ani Avdecha. Meaning beforehand the nation's confused, and that's why Ahav's not sure is that he's the Elokei Yisrael or not. Now what's clear? Eliyahu's making it clear to everyone. You are in charge. It's not me at all. It's you are in charge. Ani Avdecha, I'm your servant. Ki Ata Elokim B'Yisrael, right? And according to your word, I've done everything. Aneini Hashem Aneini, and what's the point? Because the nation will know that you are God. So here, does he get the message or what? Right? This is so clear, right? And I think the other message of him caring about the people, connecting to the people, and not just being the zealot that's on the side, I think you also see that in this story. What's he doing? He's connecting with the people. He's going out to the people. Vayigash. I think there's a lot to say here. This story, those two issues we presented at the beginning, the connection with the people. Well, here he's very much connecting with the people. And number two, making it clear it's not about Eliyahu HaNavi. It's not about him. Right, who's it about? It's about the Ribono Shel Olam. Doesn't he do a great job with that as well? And I think here you see Eliyahu HaNavi's transition. And this is the growth. And that was the whole Musar stories in the first. You see his transition. Someone who's able to make it clear that's from God. To the extent that they're screaming out, Hashem Hu Elokim. Now on Yom Kippur, you'll know what we're referring to when we do that. So that's the extent. Right? And he's also connecting with the people. We see Eliyahu HaNavi, how he's transitioned. Okay, I'll say a couple of comments, and then we're gonna look at the last part of the story. Yeah, Alan, we'll try and work around.
Ah.
That's a very good point. He's trying to. Right, he could just have the showdown with Acha, but that's not the point. Very good. And again, all this is with the subtext is how do I convince the people there's only one God and you can't have two gods at once. And so that's what he's showing them. You can't keep going, there's only one. That one's fake, there's only one. Now you have to choose which one, and they do make a clear decision.
It's really incredible
bold move
on his part. Right? It could have failed.
Right. It's fascinating. I mean, if God didn't tell him explicitly how the plan was supposed to work, so you could say that at the same time, Eliyahu HaNavi knows, you know, he's given some license here to make this play out. At the same time, it is fascinating that if he's really going out on a limb here, he's got a lot of confidence and conviction. Yeah, I hear that. Okay, any other comments? Okay, yeah, Michal. Right.
Because you can't have those you see each and every day. But
if
not,
yes.
It's much more fun,
So Michal, you're making the point which I wanna raise as we transition to the last part of this parak, which is this is an unbelievable miracle. It's this incredible story, how you see somebody, I don't know who else could do something besides Eliyahu HaNavi like this. It's masterful. It's not just he presents this whole miracle, it's the way he does it. And the setting he chooses to set up, and the language he uses, and the trash talking, and how he gets the people involved. The way he does this here is remarkable. It's not just a miracle. At the same time, how much does this work? And we're going to have to see next week if this really works or not, okay? Because, again, these one moment here is not going to really, what's going to make a lasting impact. So we're going to have to see. Okay. Yeah, please. Where else? Yes.
And here, so there's got to be something.
Okay, so I didn't pick up on that. It's a very good point. I have to think more about that. That's a very good point. That here, it's a very extreme.
We bring corporations all the time.
Yeah, it's a good. Okay, I have to think about that more. It's a great point. The Avram connection a little before, yeah. Right. Yeah. Beautiful. As Ellie's saying that perhaps part of the issue here is that if your faith is only because you keep seeing miracles, then that's not going to work out so well and on a day-to-day basis. So Ellie, I think we're going to see next week how that manifests. Last comment, then we're going to do the last part of the story.
We have to realize what they would do. You know, when you go home, now you can crush the beef. A whole bunch of things keep in mind that they're paid. These guys see this miracle, then they go home. What do they do? The whole night's long. They go to the next time.
Right.
Nothing. All of a sudden, the idle mind is about to get a little playground.
Right.
All of a sudden, they start forgetting how amazing it was. And they start.
It's like a post-NCSY Shabbaton.
Exactly. We need to say,
I can still post this to my Torah, right? You know? I think that's what it is. I love it. I say that in a joking way, but I think that's kind of what happens, right? You have this great experience, and then the next day when you're back, you know, and there's Sunday football, right? What do you do? I hear the point, but next week we'll try to reflect more on that. Okay, let's finish up this parak. I think I did not give you the last pasuk, but you'll trust me when I read it for you, okay? But there's 2 points I want to make here at the last parak. By the way, so now the people have returned. This is all great. Hashem Lo Elokim. So what would you expect immediately to happen?
Rain,
right? Rain's about to come down. Should be simple as that. Here's what happens. Now we are on pasuk Mem Aleph Ayom Eliyahu La'achav Aleichol Ushisei Hikol Hamon Hageshem. So he says to him, go up, eat and drink, because the rain is about to come. So Achav listens to Eliyahu, he goes up, he's ready to go. Eliyahu ala el Rosh HaKarmel vayigar artza. And Eliyahu goes up, and he bends to the ground, vayasam panav bein birkav. And he goes, he puts his head between his knees. Okay. Vayomer el Naharo, he says to his servant, alei naha bei derech yam. He says, go up and look westward. Vayomer in me'uma. And he goes up. He says, there's nothing here. Vayomer shuv sheva pa'amim. And he tells the servant, go back 7 times. Interesting. Vayhi bashvi'it. Then on the 7th time, he says, Vayomer hine av kitana ki kaf ish ola. There's a tiny cloud as small as a man's hand. Miyam. Vayomer alei emor el achav esor varei. And he says, go tell Achav, harness your chariot and go down. So the rain does not hold you back, meaning now it's about to arrive. You don't have this here, I apologize. So there's a great wind and there's great rain, and Achav runs off to Israel. And then the last part of the part, the last parak, what happens? Vayad Hashem Haita El Eliyahu, the hand of Hashem was upon Eliyahu. Vayishanes masnav, and he girded his loins. Vayaretz lefnei Achav abo Yisraela, and he literally runs before the chariot of Achav. 3 points I want to make here. Okay, 3 points I want to make here. First point is, what's the 7? Second point is, why is there this whole roadblock? What's it? Oh, the rain's coming. Wait, the rain's not there yet. What's going on with that? And the third thing is, what is this? Why do we care? Again, listen, there's a lot of things about Eliyahu Navi eats something for breakfast, I'm sure, too. He doesn't tell us that. So why do I need to know that he's running in front of Achav's chariot? Okay? What's going on here? I think the first two are really connected. And this I heard from Rav Amnon Bazak. And I think this is really, this is the point here. You know, every moment in time, Eliyahu Navi needs to make it very, very clear that these miracles are not coming from him. Who are they coming from? Hashem. And at this moment, maybe there's a moment here for a second where he actually does not do that, right? What happens? Eliyahu, this is Rabbi Zach's point. He goes and I look up and he says, there's nothing there. Oh, so what's the next thing Eliyahu Navi does? 7. What's 7? That's 7, right. 7, Shabbat, Shemitah. This is, 7's always reference to God, right? And this is what he does, right? And this is his way, again, here. It's a way of here, right, of, again, referencing God in a sense and bringing him into it, because there should be no roadblock. But he needs to do this in a way that that makes it more godly, more spiritual, and he brings God in through that, through the 7, go up 7 times. Otherwise, why do we need this part of the story here? What's this doing here? Yeah.
Maybe to show that Hashem is not playing right away with his willingness, like when they have to explain and Hashem doesn't.
Maybe that's also part of the point, which is Eliyahu, it doesn't just, you know, you're not bossing me around, so to speak. Right. This is not, yeah. And again, I think that's sort of dovetails with what I'm trying to argue, which is that there's something to the fact that here, it's not just immediate, there needs to be some appeal to God, there's something going on here, yeah. Ah, very good also. That the fact that it doesn't immediately... Excellent point. That the fact that it's not immediate, is, again, it's further showing he's not calling the shots, only Hashem's behind. Yeah.
Maybe also because God likes to work in a more natural sort of way, because it just performs...
Right, you want to have...
He doesn't want it to be like, now people expect
So that's fascinating. That's fascinating. It's especially in the backdrop of this, it's hard to know. Because these stories of Eliyahu and Navi, there's a lot of miracles going on. But it's interesting, if that would be the case, immediately after it's fine, let's go back down to a little bit more of a normal. That's a very interesting point. All right, last point here I want to make, and then we'll call it for tonight. Which is, I actually think the last point here in the story about Eliyahu and Navi running before Ahav's chariot, it's actually a deeply important one. Because at the beginning of the story, what's Ahav and Eliyahu's relationship? Now you're the one who's causing Bnei Yisrael to suffer. No, you're the one who's causing Bnei Yisrael to suffer. But here, what's Eliyahu HaNavi doing? Right. Eliyahu HaNavi, and Ahav again is this paradigm, this guy's sort of conflicted, right? He's serving one, he's got Ovadiyahu and Eliyahu now on one side, he's got Yizevel on the other. But now he seems to be choosing Hashem Hu Elokim, right? He's part of that team now. So Eliyahu HaNavi at the beginning, right, Atah Zeh Ocher Yisrael. Here, what's he doing? It's the ultimate sign of deference, of respect. Right? I'm running in front of your chariot. In Tanakh, it's always a sign of kavod. So what's it here? What's it about? For all the zealotry, for all, what, at this moment, such humility. Because what's the point? It's nothing personal with Ahav. It's not, there's no ego here. It's not about ego for Eliyahu HaNavi. What's it about? Devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so what message is he sending Ahav? This wasn't about me. This isn't me. This was never about me per se. This wasn't Eliyahu HaNavi. This wasn't, you know who this is about? This is all about Hashem all along. And so now when you're on board, I'm not troubling you at all. It's not, what a reverse, what a transition from the beginning to the end here. I think that's why the Navi chooses to put it in. So here we've seen this unbelievable story, Eliyahu, this massive success story, the mass tshuva movement that happens within just one day, Hashem Hu Elokim. We have to see how this turns out next week. Shkoyach, everyone. Tuesday night, Bezrat Hashem.